Broadcasting from the super-secret underground bunker at World Headquarters, this is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
All right, welcome to the very first podcast edition of the Echo Chamber. Jason Hunt here. I am the editor, fearless leader, maybe sometimes, at scififorme.com. Joining me around the table today for our discussion of the fall TV season, to my right, a recap writer for the Grimm TV show, Maya Aides. And across the table from me, in his usual spot, Mr. Timothy Harvey.
Good evening.
And to my left, science and technology contributor and overall, generally, a good guy, Dan Handley.
But okay. He doesn't want that to get out.
That's usually when you can say, hello.
Hello.
Okay. All right. So like I said, we are talking about fall TV season. It's right around the corner. It starts tonight. Yeah. And we've got a number of genre shows that are on their way. And I've got to start. When I'm doing the list of all the genre shows that we could possibly recap, and I get to the sci-fi block, and I'm really surprised at how many scripted shows there actually are in the sci-fi block. Now, granted, some of them are probably about to go away because they're on their, you know, fourth or fifth season, because sci-fi doesn't let anything go that far. But I was like, wait a minute, there's more shows on sci-fi that I actually didn't realize were still there. So, I have to... we pick on sci-fi a lot, but
well, there was a time when, of course, it started, that they had tons and tons of original programming, and they brought in reruns, syndication stuff, and then of course we all saw the rise of the sci-fi wrestling shows, and the sci-fi it canceled Farscape, and it all went to pot right there
when they announced wrestling was coming to sci-fi. I thought, okay, if it was aliens in the ring, then it would be more entertaining, and it actually would be more interesting. But then it's just regular.
I would watch that.
Just regular wrestling.
Well, but I think they ran into the problem that they were not getting the numbers they wanted. They were not getting the audience they wanted, and they did the thing that we all don't want any of these people to do, which is they sat there and said, "Well, if we do this, then the money will come," and. And it's in all fairness to a channel which I think in large part lost its way several times over the last few years. They are a business. It's really, really nice to see actual science fiction programming on the
science fiction station.
It's kind of weird.
Instead of the wrestling, they should have had this Rock'em Sock'em Robots going.
That would
well,
have been.
Well, now they did. They did Robot Wars. Yeah. Robo Wars or whatever. Yeah. So and I don't know how well did that end up doing. Is that coming back?
I think it did well for a little while. I don't remember hearing anything about it for a while. I have to say there's not a lot that I watch on the Sci-Fi Channel anymore. Mm.
But the two that stand out as far as new shows that are coming out. We just had Heroes of Cosplay is wrapping up its season. The next two reality shows that are coming through are Fangasm, which is going to be kind of like MTV's The Real World, only they're going to put a bunch of science fiction fans in the same house and see what happens.
Oh jeez.
What the sound is, right?
Let's see. I know. It just
the only problem is you put the Trekkie in with the Star Wars fan. You're going to see some fireworks.
There won't be anybody left.
See, and that's something that I think we need to address in another podcast at some point, where we discuss the dichotomy. Whenever you talk fandom rivalries, it's always Star Trek versus Star Wars. It's never Farscape versus Stargate or Firefly versus everybody. It's always Star Trek versus Star Wars.
Well, okay, those are the two big dogs in the room. And I think to some degree that's a really kind of an overblown rivalry. I mean, seriously.
It's played for laughs.
Yeah, it is played for laughs. Definitely. But unfortunately, I mean, we have sci-fi's Real World. Is that what we got here?
Pretty much. And then the other one is going to be called Naked Vegas.
Yes, yes, I remember this one. Yeah.
Boy.
Now,
okay,
right. The premise of this one, and I'm still looking for the science fiction part of this.
That's what I was going to ask.
It's over by the wrestling.
These are people who are involved in body painting, the body painting community.
Right.
And I can kind of see some of it going a little bit with Face Off, maybe, mm-hmm. you know, special effects makeup and that sort of thing. But in Vegas?
Could be some cosplay mixed in because
you know,
of that.
That's, you know, it's body painting and it's in Vegas. And none of the show descriptions talk about any kind of special effects makeup or any kind of a science fiction component. It's body painting.
It's this year's wrestling. It's bringing them over. And I think there's certainly
I just figured out what it is.
Yeah?
What?
It's a finger painting orgy.
And on that note, ladies and gentlemen. But yeah, I was like, well, you know, Haven's back. Warehouse 13 is coming back for a very, very, very abbreviated season.
Yeah.
6 episodes. There's 3 or 4 scripted. We got Helix mm-hmm. coming out. We've got the one that takes place on the Moon Colony. It's based on a book. Moon.
Oh, wait. Oh.
You know, yeah. That one.
Wow. Oh, yeah, that one.
That one, yeah.
Yeah, let's see. Oh, hang on.
This is kind of embarrassing.
There are so many where we are overwhelmed with
it's
information.
It's actually a
here,
really strong,
folks.
This is a really strong fall
High
for...
Moon. High Moon. High Moon.
There's actually a really strong fall for fantasy and science fiction programming.
Which is great.
I think it, you know, we'll talk about this more, but there's a range of quality going on here. And a range of something that I think is, you know, schlock versus, you know, and there's good schlock out there. I'm not going to argue that, but it's a strong season. It really is a strong season.
Well, and I think some of it too is some of the schlock is probably deliberate schlock.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
And some of it is probably just going to be like Defiance, where it's schlock without anybody intending for it to be. Of course, we all know that Defiance is being used just to sell the video game
and the car.
And the car, yes, and the car. The Dodge Dart that something. Will not change its design in 40 years. Thank you very much. Right. Okay. So there are other networks that we're going to talk about. Okay, so we're done with sci-fi. You know, those are the shows that are coming up with sci-fi.
Well, hang on a second. Let's talk about this, because we have, you know, this is an opportunity to talk about. You were reviewing Defiance.
I was.
This last season.
Don't remind me.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's going to come back.
I know.
We're going to make you do it again.
Yeah.
Okay. But coming out of that entire season, okay, here's an original series from Sci-Fi. Leaving aside the fact it's a game, it's got a game tie-in, which is could be potentially interesting cross-platform stuff. Okay, sure. Why not?
Yeah, I thought it would be.
Yeah, I did too.
Well,
and
it does. There was a lot of the video game stuff that took pieces from the show.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, just because I didn't play the video game, I don't know how much of the video game translated into the show.
Well, I'm not sure how you do that unless, you know, it's got to be, it's story stuff, it's characters mm-hmm. or things that are moved back and forth. But at the end of the day, I know people, for the folks who haven't been reading your reviews, mm-hmm. okay, what went wrong with this first season?
Oh, man. What
went right? I mean, I thought there was some interesting stuff going on, but there was a lot that didn't work.
Well, there were some bits. The biggest thing that I had a problem with that one was the whole Chosen One storyline with what's her name? I can't even remember her name. See, that's how much I'm blocking it out of my mind right now. But you know, the storyline is played out. We saw it with Anakin Skywalker and the prequels, where you have this young, angry teenager, rebellious, you know, hellion. He doesn't want to follow the rules and everything. And turns out to be the religious icon for her people. Okay. I thought that was contrived. I thought it was weak. I thought there were some bits of acting that I thought were pretty good. There were some items, some little character bits from some of the alien races that I thought was pretty interesting. Just because from a cultural standpoint, a lot of science fiction shows take human culture and behaviors and attitudes and wants and needs and desires and just put a different skin on it, and they're just acting like humans with a different skin.
Star Trek was big on that.
Datak and his family, that, you know, though, that group, you can definitely see a completely different mindset and a different way of thinking, and I think that played into
that's one of the things I thought worked.
I liked that,
and I think that they actually made the logical decision in some of those episodes to actually focus on the fact that your main characters were coming in and going, what are they doing?
Mm-hmm.
And they're basically being told, this isn't any of your business. This is our culture. Go away.
Right.
I thought that was interesting. I thought that actually, that's the part of the show I liked. And that's
but everything else in the show, I mean, it's almost like they took, it's almost like they went to TVTropes.com and they threw darts at the list and said, okay, well, what ones are we going to use? We'll use that one and 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 that one.
Well, come on, you kind of had Han Solo escorting around a female Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah.
In the cantina scene for an entire season.
Pretty much. But I think one of the other things that didn't work for that show is they tried to do too much in the first season. It was very complex. They tried to be very complex. There was some stuff that was just, it was really predictable. There were some things that I didn't see coming. Mayor Nikki mm-hmm. being an alien was, spoilers, it was, that was a surprise. But I figured she was going to die. Spoilers. something was going, you knew it was building up. But there were some episodes that were pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, well, why can't the entire season be like this?
Different writers, maybe?
Well, my kind of hope for that, and that's different writing, certainly, too.
But, I mean, if you have a different writer on a different episode, sometimes people have different skill levels. And
sure. I think that when if they went in with a very solid idea of the story arc, hopefully they're the really extensive show bible for something like this, and they had that arc.
I would think they'd have to be video game tie-in.
Sometimes you wonder. But I think it's going to depend on the writer and the director. Some episodes are going to be a lot stronger than the others. But I think here's my fingers crossed thought for that show, because mm-hmm. there's potential there. The first season of Star Trek: The Next Generation, we all look back and go, oh wow, that was really kind of dodgy about half the time.
Yeah.
There's some really solid episodes in the first season, but the very first Star Trek: The Next Generation episode, or Encounter at Farpoint, is bad television, and it's bad science fiction, and it's bad Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
It got so much better, and so I mean, I'm not comparing the two. Don't for a minute think I'm comparing the two.
I think there's a little bit of a flaw in that, because the first season of Next Generation was technically the fourth season of Star Trek. So it had a foundation to build on. Granted, it was a brand new show and they were doing things from scratch and they started over.
Sure, but
there was at least a point of reference there for people who had seen the original show.
But we're all the four of us sitting on this table, and I'm sure the people who are going to be listening to this, if they're older than a certain age, they remember a time when television shows were given a chance to build an audience and to succeed and fail.
Oh.
Usually over several years, as opposed to one season and gone, because they didn't get the Nielsen numbers they wanted, and or whatever, or the advertising revenue returns, whatever.
There's shows that don't even make it a full season.
You've
got the executives who are making the decisions and they like.
But it's a different economic model than it used to be.
True.
When you only had three channels in PBS, if the weather was good. You know, you let those shows live and build over time. It's a completely different model now, so it's a lot harder to do. So, I mean, I don't know. I haven't given up on the show yet, because the aliens are so interesting.
Mm. Oh, okay.
And
you write the recaps in.
No! You're doing so well at those, I would hate to take that away from you.
Mine are so full of snark.
That's all right.
Makes me think of Dustin sometimes.
You've seen our Walking Dead reviews,
yes,
right?
Yes. Speaking of which,
yes, hello.
Let's jump to Walking Dead because
sure.
that's coming up in October.
Yes, it is.
And we find out that there's going to be a spinoff.
Yes. Very
all new characters, new environment. Robert Kirkman's excited because it's a blank slate.
Very interesting.
But very similar zombies.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, hey, if we just have more ninja zombies and stealth zombies and some of these other zombies that if you've read our reviews that Dustin Adair and Curtis Smith and I do, you'll notice that we, from time to time, point out the fact that The Walking Dead has an interesting range of zombies that appear from nowhere. The teleporting zombie and...
the samurai zombie.
The samurai. Just about
that would be kind of cool.
Every
a
other kind
zombie.
Of zombie. Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. I'm actually okay with this. I mean, I think that's actually a neat idea because we've got an established world here that you don't have to spend a lot of time building up information, but you're also not, you're freed up from the kind of curious link it has to the comic books. And yes, the series has definitely strayed very, very far in many ways.
Although Kirkman says that season 4 is going to be the closest to the graphic novel,
they're
that
talking.
Any of
they're
the
talking about
an
at least one episode that's going to be basically word
it's
for word,
straight adaptation,
which is going to be very interesting because those folks who've read the comic know it is actually a much darker toned mm-hmm. comic than the and if you thought some of the last few seasons of Walking Dead were rough and you haven't read the comic, oh my! But it's. You know, it's another show that's got so many really good things going on and finds itself tripping up over its own feet from time to time. But at the same time, I'm excited about it coming back and excited about a spinoff because I think you can tell new stories in there without having tied to some of the good things and bad things with the characters we already have. So that's kind of cool.
And I'm going to take that opportunity to plug that at some point, between now and before Walking Dead comes back, you and Dustin and Curtis are going to get on these mics, and
yes,
you're going to talk about what your expectations are for season 4.
We have wants. We have wants for season 4, and Dustin months ago, right after the last season ended, came up with a list of the 5 things that he wants for the next season. And Curtis and I have our own lists, and whether or not we do those for our podcast or we put those in written form.
I think we do both.
We could do probably do both.
Yeah, we could do both. So the Team Zombie podcast is coming soon. Right, yeah?
Yes,
okay,
yes it is.
Okay.
Yes it is.
All right. So that's Walking Dead. That's that one. Let's look at network shows. Sunday night, we've got Once Upon a Time coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Dan, you've been watching that show pretty regularly because you're on Twitter
much
more frequently
that.
Than I am during that show.
I watch it.
Season 3 felt really off balance to me.
A lot of times they were kind of stretching for a storyline, it seemed.
Well, I've determined that there are 3 types of episodes on Once Upon a Time. You have episodes that really dig into character and advance the story, you know, a certain particular plot thread or a certain piece of an arc or something. Then you have the episode that fills in backstory, and then you have a filler episode, and usually it's a mix.
You mean each episode can be a mix of that?
Well, that and some of the episodes are going to be mostly one or the other type.
Yeah.
And then you have a really good episode followed by maybe 2 fillers and a backstory. And then a really good one and maybe kind of a half a good one with some backstory. And it really felt off balance. I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that we had lousy villains.
Mm-hmm.
Hook and Cora were just limp biscuits. I couldn't get into them as villains.
Well, the problem is that our villain has for several seasons been Regina.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think the more you watch that show, the more you realize everyone's just awful to her.
You start feeling sorry for her.
You do. She's not a good person, but you just sit there and go, you know, every time she tries to do something nice, all the quote-unquote heroes sit there and just beat her down.
Well, yeah, there is that. But I think too, the expectation from the first season between Regina and Gold, Regina and Rumpelstiltskin, we were like, oh, because you really wanted to see the knockdown drag out mm-hmm. between those two. I mean, there is still yet to be a throwdown of any magnitude between those two. And I think people are still waiting for that to happen.
Well, I think they've had something that came close several times, but they've kind of skirted around it.
They're almost afraid to do that. But why?
Is it because you'd be beating up on a girl? Or?
Well, no, I think that if they do it right, it's going to be pretty done. Great. But it's done. Once you do it, it's over.
The show's done.
Yeah. It's kind of like the romantic tension thing between, you know, you've got the two, will they, won't they? And as soon as they do, the show just dies.
Once Lex Luthor gets Superman, your story's done.
I think it's kind of that's what it is. And it's a shame because, I mean, for me, yeah, it was a really uneven season. I've actually found the show from the beginning to be pretty uneven, but I've always loved tuning in to watch Robert Carlyle just be wonderfully evil and manipulative.
Well, in terms of the stories having the good episode, bad episode, I think if we go into what we had earlier, the occasional good episodes, it's like they have a story arc, you know, and then they have so many episodes. When they have so many episodes to fill, they only have certain pieces of an arc to work with, and everything else is filler or builder or that type of thing.
Well, I also think, too, that they're working with so many different characters now that you almost need a playbook to keep track of who's where
It is one of the largest ensemble shows, I think, in genre TV right now.
And those ensembles are playing two parts.
Yeah.
So you're essentially doubling your cast of characters with, you know, the jumping back and forth in the time frame. Although I am glad that this season we jumped ahead so that whenever we skip between Storybrooke and Fairytale Land, we're pretty much in the same time zone now, as opposed to, you know,
Going back
20 years, going back 18 years.
I think we've kind of covered our backstory for the most part, haven't we?
A lot of them, but they do every so often come up with just a little bit more. I mean, they've gone back to Rumpelstiltskin prior to being the Dark One.
Right, and that was kind of with Cora, you know, they've got Cora's backstory, you know, being the Miller's daughter and all of that. But I think and this season we'll see some of that with Tinkerbell and Ariel.
But with the spinoff, which I think is actually, I think they realize. I mean, it makes sense that they would realize that they have so many characters becoming pretty unwieldy, and so you have a spinoff, which gives them a chance to move some of those characters, tell different stories, and not end up having to grow your original show by cramming all these. Let's do episodes with Tinkerbell.
Once Upon a Time in Wonderland is going to be all new characters.
Yeah,
they're not pulling anybody from the original show.
Well,
over
but Wonderland's already appeared.
That's
in the show. So I think you're going to have some crossover, and you're going to have probably not going to have your major a story arc crossover or anything like that. Although that could be kind of interesting to try and do something like that, but might be a little bold, a little dangerous in. And network television to do that, but
You know what's coming after Wonderland is more than like I'm making the prediction. I'm calling it now. Is we're going to see Once Upon a Time in Oz because right now we have, I think, four. We've got the 3D conversion of the original of the Judy Garland movie that's going to be in theaters.
Uh-huh.
Okay, there's one because this is 75th anniversary of Oz.
Sure.
Okay, so we got that one. Sci-Fi is doing the miniseries Warriors of Oz. CBS.
Stop bonking.
CBS is doing.
That would be the sound of my head hitting the microphone.
Stop bonking. Bonk, bonk on the head.
We also had a movie about the wizard, so.
Well, yeah, you had Oz Great Battle. And CBS is doing a modern day medical drama called Dorothy.
Right.
And now we get word that Tim Kring from Heroes and Touch is working on an adaptation for the CW. It's called Dorothy Must Die.
Actually, okay.
I kid you not.
Actually, I've read the synopsis of Dorothy Must Die.
That one actually sounds pretty interesting.
It is going to offend a great many Oz purists. If they have not been offended so far. if they've managed to make it through all the different adaptations and not scream, this is the one that's going to do it. But it does sound interesting because basically, you guys, have you guys heard about that?
No,
huh, I haven't heard.
Basically, it's Dorothy never left Oz.
Well, no, she goes back to Kansas, realizes that Kansas is boring.
Goes back to Oz.
I don't know what she'd think that.
She goes back to Oz. That's right.
She goes back to Oz because she wants the hero worship. She thought it was really cool. I'm a hero. I'm the good guy. And she basically conquers it. Yeah.
She basically conquers Oz.
Ends up being a tyrant and now is the evil
one. She's a spoiled child.
So she and she, you know, it's ruling with an iron fist with her loyal companions, the Tin Man, the Scarecrow.
Which really sounds like something that sci-fi would do.
Dorothy, yeah. The great and powerful.
Not CW.
Yeah, but you know, the thing is that based on the first season of Heroes, and based on the only on the first season of Heroes, there's this this actually, it's not a bad creative team involved
Why
here.
Why would you say that?
Because there was one good season of Heroes. And
I have to say, too, that with this being a Tim Kring thing, I need to check because I think one of our past contributors, Willa Polson, may be working on something related to that because she had said that she, you know, because she knows Tim, and she had been working on some stuff with him, and I think maybe she might be involved in something like that. So maybe we'll get some scoops.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. Ooh-hoo. But anyway, yeah, that's the one that actually looks interesting to me. The medical drama kind of makes me. I'm still trying to work my head around that one because I'm not actually seeing how that's working. But
so that is supposed to be Dorothy from Oz.
They're taking all of the characters from the Wizard of Oz, and they're putting them into a modern medical drama hospital environment thing. I don't know if Dorothy's going to be the doctor, or if she's an administrator or somebody. I don't know, whatever.
Who knows?
Eric Williams is joining us. Let's see here. Let's. Let us answer there. Hello, Eric. Where is Eric? Hello. I don't think we're getting a good signal.
Can you see me? Oh, balls.
Yes, there you are. Okay, so Monday night we have Sleepy Hollow.
Yes.
Which is the new adaptation of the Ichabod Crane story from Orson and Kurtzman. I don't know. Do we want to talk about Orson and Kurtzman?
Well, I think to some degree we kind of do because the name, especially with Orson especially being very loud in the fan world right now for his ability to tick off is a nice way to say a significant portion of his fans, the fan base.
Yeah, I'd say that.
But I think there's a very definite backlash against those particular guys for things like Transformers and the Star Trek movies and things like that. But they also were largely responsible for huge chunks of Fringe. So I think I'm less concerned about them running being behind the show than I would be hearing about the new script they've written for whatever feature. Because I think that with a series, I think past experience has shown that they do better with character development and storyline when they have time to tell it. It is a much... All four of us around this table have written things. All four of us could be called writers. We're very aware that in the story structure stuff, it is easier to tell a story. Five of us, sorry. it's much easier to tell a story when you've got time to tell a story.
Right.
And it's much easier to develop characters when you've got time to develop those characters. So, you know, for all the flaws of... I will say my daughter and I watched the first Transformer movies and we had a great time. It was robots beating each other up. It was
with
stupid.
A cute girl.
It was stupid and dumb and we had a great time. And that's where it ends.
Of course, it's Michael Bay. He shoots before he has a script. So
at the same time, you know, these guys actually did have, you know, some really interesting stuff going on with Fringe. So am I bothered by the fact that they're behind this? No, I'm not. Whether or not it's any good, that's another question. I mean, we've got, you know, IO9 raving about the first episode.
Oh, they loved it.
They say it's absolutely crazy, and they basically it's just the show just goes right off the bat going just nuts, and they love that idea.
There's a difference between crazy and crazy good.
Well, we've got one episode to watch, and you know this may be one fantastic series. It may be one really strong pilot, and six episodes in, we're all going, why is this on the air? Who was really responsible for this nonsense?
But and if DC Comics was running it, it would only get 6 episodes.
That's a whole another podcast. And Jason and I already did one of those, and we should do another one because there's even more fun news from the brain trust over at DC. But at the same time, you know, I think that it looks interesting. It looks like fun. It looks like they're just going, let's just kind of go crazy here and have some fun, and that could be good. It could be a lot of fun. So I'm writing the reviews. I hope it's a lot of fun.
I think as long as they don't take themselves too seriously, that's going to be the big thing. Because if they understand just how demented this whole premise is, and totally embrace it, like you're saying, you know, the pilot episode is just nuts, and if they roll with that throughout the entire run of however many episodes they get, great.
I think this is this is the kind of thing that you can actually do in one of two ways, and they're two extremes. You either take it extremely seriously, and you treat it like it is, you know, no matter how insane it is, you treat it like your history.
It's history.
It could happen.
Right. And that could be very, very effective. Like, or you just...
Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, yes, exactly. Like, you know, like True Blood or Supernatural.
Right.
Where it seems to come together pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. And I think that... But the other thing is that if you just go completely crazy, you just sit there and just go, oh, okay, let's just throw everything against the wall and see what happens. Headless people running around with flak jackets and firearms and you know, so, but you know, the question becomes is this going to be a more Supernatural X-Files kind of show? What is this going to be? Grimm? Is this going to be, what, you know, what's the tone ultimately going to end up being? So I think it's, you know, it looks interesting. It looks like it could be fun, and I hope it could be fun, because, you know, it's hard to, you know, there's only so much good fantasy and science fiction on. There's a lot of stuff this season. It is a strong season for that, but still, good programming.
Right.
You know, so.
Well, with the Sleepy Hollow Headless Horseman concept, there are so many different, every single one is a deviation from the original, so it's be interesting to see this. I'm interested to see how they portray Ichabod Crane in this, because, you know, seeing all these different other variations of it, there was the classic Disney cartoon where he was the school teacher.
That's right. My source material.
Exactly.
And then you had the Tim Burton one where Johnny Depp was the scientist, using the scientific means of trying to, solve the crime.
This one, for the folks who aren't familiar, is, you know, he's a soldier. He's a he's a spy for George Washington. So it's a different version of the character entirely. He's also married to a witch. Who's dead, but needs to come back to life, and there's a curse, and so
there's always a curse.
Wait, guys, be nice.
But so I think it's
no, it, I'm not talking. I'm not saying that being married is a curse. No,
okay.
or that his wife is a witch. Because, no, she's actually a witch.
No, I got that. I was afraid we were going down some path about women being a curse or something, and I want to just clarify here, guys. You know,
that path we have yet to take, but we probably will.
You know, but hey, you know, depending on what kind of show this turns out being, there's a possibility they could go down that path, and that would be a mistake, unfortunately. You know, but it does seem to have a strong female lead.
Okay.
And
are you talking about the police officer?
Yeah.
His partner.
So I think there's some definite potential here. And
some comic relief. At least based on what I've seen.
Right.
The promos.
Yeah. There's definitely comedy running through it. So I think that if they can maintain this sort of anything goes kind of thing, but have some structure to it. I mean, you know, Fringe was often very, very funny. And it was often very, very creepy and very, very just, you know, that was a show that was not afraid to look at its heroes, its main characters, and show that they were very flawed people.
Right.
And I think that this is obviously a completely different thing. But at the same time, I'm not bothered by these two guys being behind it. You know, whereas, you know, if I hear they're writing Star Trek 3, I'm going to be going, oh, I know J.J. Abrams isn't directing 3. Could we not have new writers?
No.
So, and that is
they're writing it.
If you have, well, but somebody else is directing it. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not against Abrams. I'm just saying that maybe if there's a different director.
One of the names being kicked around is Brad Bird.
See, that'd be okay.
And I'm sitting there thinking, well, maybe Brad Bird can do for JJ Trek what Manny Coto did for Enterprise, like make it more like Star Trek.
Well, you know,
stranger things have happened.
I've kind of been hoping that they got the first two movies out of their system, and they're actually starting a 5-year mission. So maybe we'll get some Star Trek, some Star Trek that I want to see.
Oh my gosh, this sounds like something with the Chiefs football team. You know, we've got a 5-year plan here.
It's a building year.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a building several years, and I think that is perhaps a flaw in their plan of storytelling, but. That's a whole other podcast. Let's stay on focus here about television.
Also on Monday, we've got Beauty and the Beast coming back for second season.
I confess I do not watch this show at all.
I do not either. Leslie Walker is the one who does the recaps for it. She's been very, very impressed with the show and is looking forward to the next season. I just from reading her recaps, the writing has been pretty solid. The acting is touch and go, but... It's definitely hitting its target demographic, let's say.
And what is that?
You. Women 18 to 34, 18 to 54, you know. and it's a generational thing, I'm sure, because you've got the older women who are probably watching the show because they watched the CBS version with Linda Hamilton and Ron Perlman, which is the remake of that.
Okay.
And then you've got the younger generation that's watching it for whatever reasons they're watching it for.
Lana Lang and what's his name, who's the hero.
Yeah. So. You know, you've got Kristen Crook, and you've got...
That's pretty much it, yeah.
Whatever the guy's name. I don't even know the lead actor's name. I'm blanking on it. Jay something, I think. And... The one thing that I've got a problem with it.
Jay Ryan,
yes, thank you.
Ryan.
The one thing that I've got a problem with is the fact that he doesn't look like a beast. And I understand what they're doing because it's a CW show and they all have to be pretty. But
we're laughing because it's true.
What's that, Eric?
That's not a CW thing. That's not a CW thing. That's a Hollywood.
Yeah, but if you look at all of the CW shows, everybody is pretty.
See, I've had this theory that I've. Oh yeah, that's definitely true. But the thing about like being ugly is you actually have to be pretty first. Like Ugly Betty worked because America Ferrera is kind of hot, and then they made her look like a geek, and it was like, oh wow, she's ugly, but she's not. So that's how that works.
This is very true.
Yes, he has hit on something, I think.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2013 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media.